And if you want to know more about that, you can go to the website humanenergy.io, humanenergy.io. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. Monica, you were just talking about how when humans first left Africa, and I'd love for you to take us on that trajectory further.
Well, from our birthplace in Africa 2 million years ago, humans were undergoing the same diversification process that initially had happened with the rest of the animal world, where a shrew, you know, becomes a camel, a bat, an elephant, a dolphin, you know, it fans out. So it's diversification. But, you know, so initially there were more than one human species. But when Homo sapiens began to spread out, it shifted to divergence. And we know this now because, you know, some of the people went east, some went west. But when they met up in Hawaii, they were the same species. Along the way, every time they had to deepen into their biome and adapt, you know, the way animals would adapt and diversify, instead, they created tools, you know, so that they made a tool that would act like a claw. And they did not change their biological anatomy. So this is the noosphere. This is, you know, one of the aspects of the noosphere is tools. And so that's part of the collective mind has drawn the biome into its orbit.
So in the collective mind, we're saying that there is a tendency to go for developing more community. That word community came up. I think, Brian, you mentioned community. And is that important in what we're really participating in?
Yeah, I think it is, because it is, it's what the universe is aiming for. Going back to Zarathustra, yeah, a person would ask, am I on the side of truth or the side of falsehood? We have, of course, evolved beyond that. And now we have this question to ask. It's a deep question. Am I on the side of the Earth community, or am I opposed to the Earth community? Earth has developed this amazing spectrum of beauty all over the planet. And because we failed to remain in touch with nature, because we were so fascinated with developing these philosophies and religions and civilizations, we cut ourselves off from nature. And our impact on the planet, as everybody knows, is the worst thing that has happened on Earth in 65 million years. And it's really, most of this destruction is not carried out by evil people. It's carried out by ignorant people. So we're at this moment now when their soul searching is taking place. Are my actions contributing to the beauty of the world? Or is it the opposite? Is my selfishness leading to the destruction of species? Scientists estimate that, it's hard to get an exact number, but thousands of species. Some scientists think it's as high as 25,000 species are disappearing each year, disappearing. Once again, this is something that we have to ask. How are we participating in the destruction? How are we participating in the rejuvenation? I think it's a moment of profound moral complexity.
So I'm also remembering that in physics, going back to Max Planck, the physicist, back in the 1930s, I think, when he said, consciousness is the basis of all reality. That's the fundamental place, not materialism, but consciousness. So if consciousness is something that is all pervasive, I guess what I'm hearing from you is it's our personal assignment, so to speak, to be on the side of, as you said, Brian, Earth community.
These words, consciousness, you know, it's something that we are just now studying explicitly. I mean, you you couldn't get a degree studying consciousness in the Western world until very recently. And so we're discovering, because the fundamental assumption of Max Planck and Albert Einstein and all of these amazing people, the fundamental assumption was that matter was without consciousness, that animals without consciousness. So Max Planck, after discovering quantum physics, you know, he began to realize, no, it's different than what we thought. I guess another word I'd like to throw in our discussion, Justine, would be creativity. Mm-hmm. Creativity. And at least the way Monica and I put together our book was to give cosmic creativity a fundamental role. And I sort of love it, because even though people could argue about things like consciousness, you can't argue about creativity. I mean, we started off with just a bunch of particles, right? And then we created atoms, and the atoms created galaxies that created stars. I mean, it blows my mind. And the thing is, this is going on right now, right? We don't know if there's life on other planets, but we do know there are rubies. We know there are emeralds. We know there's gold. I mean, it's like all of this is being cooked into existence, so that if we look back over 14 billion years of cosmic history, what we see is the universe is aiming at bringing forth complex communities, ever more complex community. So it's like a law of the universe. It's the essence of the universe. And it's wow. We by ignoring that and just focusing on our corporate profits, you know, we've eliminated rainforests. It's just, people in the future will just be blown away by the ignorance of our time. But our book and our video series is celebrating the reversal of that destruction, because we're awakening to something like a planetary mind, and we participate directly with this. I mean, I could go on forever, but I guess I've made my point. Monica, help me out here.
If we can recognize that this is a 13.8 billion year old universe developing, and that human consciousness itself is developing, then we can maybe see that the division that was instituted by Descartes, that separated matter from mind in the first place, maybe missed its mark a bit. Because what's really real is that, you know, there's our actual manifest world, and then there's possibilities and potency in a creative universe. And each entity that manifests and becomes real then becomes a location or a mode of possibilities, and able to enact a unique set of possibilities. Each one of us is unique, as is every other entity, as a mode of the whole developing universe. And so when I started my graduate studies, I became convinced very early that, you know, I just wanted to insist all the time, consciousness goes all the way down, you know, like, and people would be like, wait, is a rock conscious? And I would find that hard to defend. But a rock is changing. You know, everything that, every entity that is changing before our eyes every day, every moment. So there are creative processes at work throughout everything. So when you have something like a time developmental view of things, you can start to feel differently about what it means. Maybe it's not so important to be conscious or dead or matter. You know, maybe consciousness itself isn't what we're striving for, but to recognize creativity everywhere.
Well, I'm having the insight when you talk about is a rock conscious or not, I'm talking about everything. All the universe is an energetic relationship. Even within a rock, if you go into the smallest particles of a rock, it's, you know, what, protons, mm-hmm. neutrons, electrons, or whatever, and they're all spinning. And am I getting a picture here?
No, absolutely. Yeah, no. I get another way of saying it would be, I try to stay as close to science as possible. And so any scientist would agree with what I'm about to say, even though it's radical. And that is that the elements of a rock, right, left to their own processes, developed into humans. The elements developed into humans. Our consciousness is present there in a latent form. And all of the elementary particles are vibrating back and forth, and they're entering into relationships. And over billions of years, they brought forth this amazing beauty that was there from the beginning. I mean, think of how different this view is from the traditional view of Christianity, in the Sistine Chapel, so that God comes down and touches the hand of the finger of Adam. I mean, that iconography can be saved through an interpretation, but I'm just saying we know that the matter by itself had the potentiality to create life and mind and consciousness. It's all one continuous evolving community, the universe as a whole.
So I would imagine that knowing that creativity is the motion of the universe, so to speak, and that this can help us to negate our tendency to despair and depression about what's happening.
Definitely.
Yeah. I see you both shaking your head to say, Monica, you seem enthused about that.
How can we not be about something? You know, you spoke about the ontology and how to access that. Well, you know, it's like you have certain fascinations, follow them. You know, it's like what makes you come alive in your relationships with others? And a lot less time spent imposing our ideas about what's right and wrong on others. But instead, how do I come alive? How can I live so that others may live and be creative?
Let me add one thing to that. And that, going back to the James Webb Space Telescope, I mean, here's the excitement. Justine, here it is. You've got the Paleolithic humans. They're looking out at 3,000 stars. Now you have the modern humans, us, and we have this immense treasure chest of knowledge. And if you're a Paleolithic guy and you're going, I wonder what the heck those things are out there, all right? One person alone will never figure that out. But as a collective, we did. In other words, the noosphere is massively powerful at satisfying the deepest desires of humanity. So when we take on the health of our planet, when we take on the health of our planet, from a noospheric perspective, we will see a gigantic change in the health of our planet. As it will be as vast as going from a Paleolithic person's view of the heavens to what we now know. Likewise, in education, and in religious practices, the noosphere is going to bring forth a really radically different world. And to see that, to feel it in the midst of the chaos, that is what, you know, that's why we wrote the book. That's why we made these 35 videos.
Every invention becomes a universal achievement. immediately, almost with growing speed. I mean, we're in communication so quickly. And so, yes, the trials that we're facing are bigger and more difficult, but our capacity to respond collectively is also growing. You know, there is convergence brings abundance in the possibilities. We just have to get our attitudes straight about this.
This approach that Monica and I are promoting, this approach receives criticism as being Pollyanna. And we are not overlooking the difficulties of our time. I mean, it's just so apparent. Anybody who can think realizes that the suffering is just immense and it's horrible. But we are trying to say that in the middle of this, there are activities that are happening that are leading to a very, very different world. And that is, all of these activities are what we mean by the rising up of the collective noosphere.
Is there a tipping point of those who are participating in the noosphere in a positive earth enhancing way?
Yeah, it's really important to recognize that nothing is ever 100, 99% and 1%. We live in the midst of, because if it is 99 to 1, nobody's paying attention. That's holding steady. But everywhere where, important decisions are being made, it's 49-51. And so those are the areas that are so capable of tipping in ways that we can't know for sure or even anticipate. But, if there is, if we made it this far, and if there is anything about, if this universe is about something, I really do believe deeply that there's the potential. It's not guaranteed, but there's a potential for something amazing to happen when things tip in certain ways. And as we become a single, higher and higher level of responses to the problems we face collectively, it will be for the benefit of the whole Earth community and not Pollyanna.
So you're saying that each one of us has a responsibility for putting into, adding, I don't know, I'm thinking of the analogy of the soup, of adding a little spice to the soup, or adding the potatoes to the soup, or adding the broccoli to the soup. And each one of us are participating in the cooking of a global, collective, planetary well-being.
Each one of us has a responsibility to amplify what we love and to do it with a heart that is as best aligned with the dynamics that have come before, the Zarathustrian idea, with the morals that are relevant and that we can draw from in our religious institutions, etc., and then to amplify what we love by taking care of what is immediately around us in the best ways we can. If everyone were to just do that instead of trying to impose and fight and argue and polarize, then amazing things can happen, I believe. Do you agree, Brian?
Yeah, and I think just to bring in the younger generation, when they view what we have done, what let's say my generation has done, it's easy to fall into nihilism, despair, the drug opioid crisis. But this is not just something that we believe in. It's something that can be experienced directly. We can experience directly the way in which we are the creative center of the universe. That's what where we are and what we are. Wow, we're at this moment of when a planet, to use the phrase Monica used before, we're in the moment when a planet is moving from a living planet to a thinking planet. I mean, there may be many, many planets out there that have made this transition, But we are at that moment right now. And like you say, it isn't something that is happening out there. It's happening inside each of us. And each of us has a particular role to play.
What is the role that the internet has to play in all of this, in this collective creativity, and even in the midst of fake information that can also be distributed by the internet? So what role does the internet have to play?
The internet would be an extension of this, of the power of the symbol, the power of the symbol. Earlier on, Monica referred to the reproductive imagination, and this relates to the power of the symbol. I mean, it's worth really reflecting on the fact that at one time, humans apparently could not consciously recall memories from the past. We had the same kind of mind as the chimpanzee 6 million years ago. Early humans had the same chimpanzee mind. And chimpanzees and other primates, mammals, have episodic memory. So when they're in a situation that's similar to a previous event, they will remember that and respond in intelligent ways. But the crucial creation of Paleolithic humans was the power of being able to remember what took place 3 days ago, bring that back. This of course, is a theoretical interpretation of what went on in the caves. But I mean, and just imagine how hard it was to get into these caves. It's pitch black. You're crawling on your back for, you know, days, and yet something drew them there. And the idea is that it was the fascination of actually creating a new form of human consciousness, this ability, what psychologists now call conscious recall. So we developed that power. Now we're at another stage. We're asked to develop an imagination that apprehends events within a 14 billion year history, to see each entity as manifesting this 14 billion year process. You can feel it. I mean, it's just through reflecting, like when I was talking about thinking about the fish, by reflecting on this, we enter into a new form of human consciousness, what we're calling in our book, time developmental experience, time developmental consciousness. And I know I'm going on a little bit long here, but let me give you one example of it. What does it mean, time developmental experience? The two scientists that discovered the expanding universe are Arno Penzias and Robert Wilson. They built this radio telescope in New Jersey, and they were capturing the light from the beginning of time. Now, at first, they didn't know that this was a light from the beginning of time, so they had to go through a number of experiments and analyze the thing mathematically as well. But I just want you to imagine, we're at that moment, they're waiting to hear the signal. They've altered the telescope a little bit, and now they're waiting to hear if the light from the beginning of time is coming. And they heard it. They heard it as a hiss. Now, what I want you to do is put a chimpanzee right next to them in the same room. The chimpanzee will hear a hiss, and the humans are hearing a hiss. But the humans are hearing via all that we've discovered in science. So they're hearing, and they know they are hearing the vibrations from the beginning of time. As they hear it, they get goosebumps. They're just so thrilled. They are, the first humans to hear this. The chimpanzee will hear it, and it'll be a different experience. The chimpanzee may think, there's a river nearby, you know, there's a river. So in that gap right there is the form of intelligence, a form of consciousness that we are only now, as a human species, we're only now really entering into time developmental experience.
Oh my, wow. You've just really taken us on a trip of the whole revolution and creativity of our species. So there's so much more that we could talk about. We've run out of time, but I want to thank you both, Monica and Brian, for being with us today on this program. And I want to remind our listeners that the story of the Noosphere, Noosphere is spelled Noosphere. It's available on YouTube or go to the website of humanenergy.io and you'll find it there, all 37 or 35 videos to go deeper into this. And I just thank you so much for being with us on New Dimensions today.
Thank you, Justine. Thank you. It was great.
Thank you. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you. I've been speaking with Monica DeRapps-Bowles and Dr. Brian Thomas Swim. And to learn more about their work, you can go to that website, humanenergy.io, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3845.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over four decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions.
You can deny all the things I've seen, all the things I've discovered, but not for much longer. Because too many others know what's happening out there.
I want to believe.
Hi, this is David Duchovny, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 Burnaby.
The SFU Disability and Neurodiversity Alliance, referred to as DNA, is a student-led network of community members who identify as disabled, autistic, neurodivergent, deaf, mad, and or as having a disability, a chronic illness, long-term condition, or a mental illness. At DNA, we work together to create campus change. We address ableism, and we promote disability justice while opposing oppression in all of its forms. We are the SFU Disability and Neurodiversity Alliance. We are DNA. We provide support for students who are having difficulty with their schooling or accessing the services they need. email access@sfss.ca or drop by the DNA Resource Center, room 1300 in the sub-building. That was access@sfss.ca, room 1300 in the sub-building.